I think this ship is brand new, Arthur.
How can you tell? Have you got some exotic device for measuring the age of metal?
No, I just found this sales brochure lying on the floor. The universe can be yours. Yes, look. Sensational new breakthrough in improbability physics. As the ship's drive reaches infinite improbability, it passes through every conceivable point in every conceivable universe almost simultaneously. Mm. You select your own re-entry point. Be the envy of other major governments. This is big league stuff.
It looks a hell of a lot better than...
Yes, the infinite improbability drive. A machine that could take you everywhere in the universe and to all those places at the same time. Douglas Adams created it more than 20 years ago as the ultimate spacecraft. Too bad it was a work of fiction. But what if we applied that idea to computers? What if you could make a machine that could take a problem, look at all the solutions at the same time, and give back the right answer? This may sound like science fiction, but it's something that physicists are actually trying to build. And if they can do it, they'll have created a machine capable of doing things no computer can do today. It'll be a computer that'll keep mathematicians up late designing new and more complicated problems, and the CIA up late worrying about the secrets they use normal computers to protect. To build something like this is going to mean a journey into a strange world, one that even Einstein called spooky. It's the world where our normal rules don't work anymore, where particles are waves, and looking at something the wrong way can make it disappear. The world of quantum mechanics. Dr. Seth Lloyd is a regular visitor to this weird world. He's an associate professor at MIT, and this is his definition of this new type of machine.
It's two things. One, it's a computer, so it processes information. And two, it's quantum mechanical. So quantum mechanics is the branch of physics that deals with how stuff behaves when it gets really small. Quantum things can behave in weird ways that our ordinary classical big things can't. And so a quantum computer is a computer that processes information in a way that takes advantage of this kind of quantum weirdness.
Weirdness is a good word for the quantum world. We've known for a long time that the way things interact at the quantum level follows rules that don't apply to bigger objects. Rules any normal person who isn't a physicist just can't understand. So you might wonder why anyone would bother trying to make a computer that operates using quantum rules. Dr. Raymond Laflamme thinks it's worth the bother. He's a Canadian scientist working at the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico trying to build quantum computers. And he says it's inevitable that we're going to have quantum computers one day, whether we want them or not.
The size of transistors are shrinking by a factor of 2 every 18 months. And the size of transistors have shrunk to a very small size, now roughly kind of size of micrometers. If we keep on going, size of transistors will go down to atomic levels. And at that point, we'll have to deal with quantum mechanics. So on a very practical level, if we can want to push classical computers to go faster and faster, which is done by make them smaller and smaller, then we will reach the level where quantum mechanics become important.
So, if computers are going to become quantum anyway, then someone had better figure out how they're going to work. And to do that, it helps to know a few things about the computers we use today. Normal computers can do very complicated things, but when it comes right down to it, they're really only moving numbers around. And those numbers are all represented by combinations of ones and zeros. These ones and zeros are called bits. Well, quantum computers use bits too, but not the ones and zeros we're used to. Dr. Lloyd explains.
A quantum bit could be a photon, a particle of light that's wiggling. We call it wiggling back and forth zero, and we could call wiggling up and down one. Or it could be a little tiny nuclear spin, a nucleus of an atom that, if we call it spinning clockwise, we could call that zero, and spinning counterclockwise, we could call that one.
Well, so far, all we've done is replace the ones and zeros of a normal computer with the spins of atoms. This is pretty similar to what we're used to working with. But there's something weird about quantum mechanics that, when applied to computing, makes things suddenly much more interesting. Dr. Lloyd.
It's the fact that quantum mechanics is weird that makes quantum computers able to do more than a classical computer can do. So the central weirdness in quantum mechanics comes from what's called wave-particle duality. In quantum mechanics, things that we think of as discrete, like, you know, basketballs, atoms, or bits, have waves associated with them. And these waves have neat continuous-like properties. For instance, one thing that we're very familiar with about waves is that we can add them up, right? When I have my two daughters in the bathtub and they're splashing away and one is making a wave from one side of the bathtub and the other makes a wave from the other side of the bathtub, when the two waves come in the middle, well, they add up in such a way that, well, typically they add up in such a way that it splashes water all over me. But anyway, they can interfere with each other with surprising and indeed alarming consequences. And if we go to a quantum bit, then the wave that corresponds to zero, like, you know, a nucleus rotating clockwise, and the wave that corresponds to one, nucleus rotating counterclockwise, these can also add up and give us a new wave, which in some funny sense corresponds to zero and one at the same time.
Looking at two answers at the same time, it's no wonder quantum mechanics is described as weird. But if we accept that it's possible, then it opens up all kinds of options. A single quantum bit, or qubit, can look at two possible answers to a problem. And when it's combined with a second qubit, you can examine four solutions. In fact, every qubit added will double the number of solutions the quantum computer can try. And don't forget, the quantum computer is looking at all the answers at once. So a quantum computer with 10 qubits is able to solve more than 1,000 problems at a time. Now, for example, think about your grade school times tables. If you asked a normal computer to calculate all the times tables from 1 to 10, it would take 100 steps. First, the computer calculates 1 times 1, then 2 times 1, 3 times 1, and so on, until it reached 10 times 10. Ask a quantum computer to do the same thing, and it figures out all the answers at once. Given the speed of today's supercomputers, this may not seem like a big deal, but because each qubit doubles the number of options a quantum computer can examine, it doesn't take a very large one to match the strength of the biggest computers we have today. Dr. LaFlemme.
30 qubits is kind of a magic number for quantum computers, because that's the limit where classical computer cannot catch up with quantum computers anymore. When we go to about 30, 2 to the power 30 is about 10 to the power 10, which corresponds to about 10 gigabytes of memory, which corresponds to the biggest classical computer around us. So between, let's say, 30 to 40 qubits are the place where quantum computers do not have analog classical computers around us today.
30 qubits performing 10 gigabytes of calculations? That's like being able to use a pocket calculator to instantly calculate the national debt for the next 100 years. But physicists still have a long way to go before they can build such a computer. They're working their way up from the very simplest systems, two-qubit machines using atoms. One of the original quantum computers has been built by scientists at IBM in San Jose, California. Leven van der Spin is a Stanford graduate student who was part of the team that built this first machine.
Our quantum computer consists of molecules, and the spins of two of the atoms in that molecule represent the quantum bits. Now we have a whole bunch of these molecules in a liquid solution, and then next, very close to the sample, we have small pickup coils. They're just like little pieces of wires wound in a little coil, and these coils we use to send radio frequency pulses to the spins to manipulate their states, and the same coils are used to read out the final state of the spins.
A computer in a liquid, sort of like using your coffee to check your email. So now you have your quantum computer. The trick is getting information into it, then getting an answer back. It turns out the best way to talk to qubits is by using radio waves. Here's where physicists have borrowed technology from medicine. The machine van der Spin described is called a nuclear magnetic resonance spectrometer, or NMR, and it's normally used by doctors to look inside the human body. When an NMR is used by a doctor, it's really measuring the spins of atoms, which is what our physicists want to do as well. The key is that a spinning atom emits a characteristic radio wave. It's these waves the NMR detects. The clever part is that the physicists can also make the machine work backwards. As well as reading radio waves, they make the NMR send out radio waves. This allows them to move the qubits. So, by sending radio waves in, they can program the quantum computer. And by listening to the signal that comes back, they can read the answer. Just like programming a normal computer. But how do you get the answer you want? Well, for the solution, it's worth going back to the bathtub Dr. Lloyd mentioned earlier. When waves moving in different directions meet, they add up. Sometimes this adding will make the new wave larger. Sometimes their addition will make the waves disappear. The clever part in programming a quantum computer is making all the waves for the wrong answers add up and disappear. That way, all you're left with is the right answer. But sometimes just having an answer really isn't enough.
Oh, deep thought. Do you have...
An answer for you?
Yes.
Yes, I have. Though I don't think you're going to like it. The answer to everything...
Yes?
Life, the universe, and everything...
Yes?
Is...
Yes?
Is...
Yes?
42. Now that's a nice number. But like the characters in the scene from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, if you don't know the question, it's still not very useful. And that's one of the challenges facing quantum computing, coming up with good questions. Dr. Richard Cleave is one of the mathematicians who's working on developing problems for quantum computers, complex math puzzles too large for modern computers, problems like factoring large whole numbers. You remember high school and factoring integers, don't you?
So what does it mean to factor integers? Well, if I give you the number 15, it's factors, or it's 3 times 5. Now, for a small number like 15, it's easy to factor just in your head. But if the numbers are large, like they have hundreds of digits or bits, then it's extremely difficult to factor on any existing computer today. So the quantum computers are more powerful in that respect. And why does one care about factoring large numbers like that? Well, most of the codes that exist are the encryption schemes that exist on computers. Their security is based on the hardness of this factoring problem. So if a quantum computer could be built, then it would basically break just about all the codes that exist now.
This is why organizations like the CIA and the banks are so interested in quantum computing. They take advantage of the difficulty of factoring large numbers to encode information. And if quantum computers ever get built, then someone will have to come up with a whole new way of hiding secrets. But bringing about the downfall of Western civilization isn't the only use for a quantum machine. Other scientists have ideas for using quantum computers to find information quickly from large databases. All we need to do now is to make quantum computers with more than 2 qubits. But don't go withdrawing your money and putting it under a mattress just yet. The bank codes are safe for a while. Physicists are still a long way from successfully hooking enough atoms together to make a large computer. In fact, Dr. Cleave has doubts they'll ever be able to build a 30 or 40 qubit machine.
The worst case scenario is it may turn out that there is some really fundamental obstacle that makes this all infeasible. Another possibility is that it could be like nuclear fusion, where people have been for many decades trying to build a fusion reactor. And we know in principle it can be done because the sun is a fusion reactor, but it's difficult to do that in any practical way on the Earth. Or there could be some kind of a breakthrough with something analogous to the discovery of the transistor. When that replaced the vacuum tubes, that just meant the technology could just develop much faster. So some breakthrough in the physical hardware could occur.
If we get that breakthrough, then the future of quantum computing looks very bright. And the ultimate computer may be within our reach. Dr. Lloyd is looking forward to that point, when computers use every atom as a qubit. And he's done the calculations of what this ultimate computer would be like.
How far can you possibly take computation? Take something the size of a conventional laptop, so about a kilogram of matter occupying a liter of volume, and you ask, suppose we make every speck of matter inside this computer perform computation, and ask what the specs of this computer would be. And here, the laws of physics actually tell us that this ultimate laptop could do about 10 to the 50 operations per second, as compared with, you know, something more on the order of 10 to the 10th or 10 to the 11th operations per second in our existing computers. And then you ask, well, let's suppose that we store as much information as we possibly could on this. So not only every atom stores a bit of information, but every photon, every electron, every darn elementary particle in this computer is going to store a bit of information. And you find that you could store about 10 to the 30 bits of information on this computer, as opposed to around 10 to the 12th, 10 to the 14th bits of information on big supercomputers or today. So when you look at it, we're still very far away from the ultimate physical limits of computation. Oh, and by the way, the interior of this laptop would look something like a thermonuclear explosion. So there would indeed be actually rather severe packaging issues to be solved in order to make this work as well.
A thermonuclear device on my desktop. Well, while the ultimate computer is still a long way off, Dr. Lloyd does think it won't be too long before quantum computers are a part of everyday life.
You're unlikely to have a little quantum computer that you're talking with and that has a little, screen looking at the doings of the atoms anytime in the next 5 or 10 years. However, I wouldn't rule it out in, 15 or 20 years.
Information traveling on the back of a photon. Computers made from single molecules. Just 10 years ago, this was a fantasy. And while right now they're still the tools and toys of physicists and mathematicians, down the road, they may just replace the computer on your desktop. And maybe it won't be so long, after all, before we have the computer equivalent of the infinite improbability drive. Coming up next, microbial mind games.